Continue.
Okay. If there was someone that you could power slap clean across the face, who would that be?
Person or people?
Just anyone. Come on. Who would it be?
God. I can't say. They might listen to this.
That was so fucking shit. I was recording that as well for a story and you fucking...
Too
late now.
Group of people. Every politician.
Aww.
Alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They really... Not that I'm into politics. I'm not... But, and when you get clips of them answering, or not in, sorry, let me rephrase that, completely avoiding any type of accountability or direct answer to any questions they get asked. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, Matt Hancock's got a very slappable face on him.
Oh, fuck.
Like a proper Stockton slap, like a Nate Diaz slap or a power slap.
It's unreal. Like, I can't believe these people are in their own little bubble of running the country. It baffles me. It baffles me that someone like him or any of them become like in charge and head of the health service or education and they've got no back, you know what I mean? They're not specialists in those areas. Then they'll have people underneath them who are specialists in the areas going, hey, we think you should do that, and then making their own fucking mind up anyway.
Yeah, I didn't think tonight's Q&A would start with politics. So
it's not politics, it's just talking about wankers, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm trying to think here in the fitness industry, I'd love to power slap right across the fucking face.
In the fitness industry?
Yeah, who should we power slap? Surely we'll see some of these fucking parcels at one of these events we do. Who would you power slap? We'll have to come back to that, you know. It's actually quite hard. There's plenty of people who deserve a slap. Like, go to the root of the business mental problem. There was people who caused that. Like, fucking, tell you what, if I was a girl, I obviously wouldn't do this to the person. But what was that fucking girl called who always put on a voice, that business mentor? What was it? She always used to put on an accent or a voice as if she was fucking from somewhere else, but she wasn't. She's probably just from fucking Doncaster or something, stupid slag. What's she called now? Oh, what's she called who puts on that fucking voice and lives in Dubai and all that?
Finkler.
Yeah, fucking knobhead. She'd get a power slap from me. I tell you who else would get a power slap. Remember that Tanner, what's he called? Chadister. He's the other one. Chana, Tadister. He's fucking power slaps as well. Right across his kite. Anyone who stands with a fucking picture of a vinyl fucking thing for how many sales you've done in front of a Lamborghini or whatever it was deserves a fucking slap right across the kisser, don't they? Who else used to do it? Some fucking... Oh. Yeah, anyway.
Nice bit of an intro, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm really intrigued by that power slapping thing. I'm really intrigued by it. I think it looks good. Do you see how they test that if they're fully knocked out or not? They make them walk around, which is even funnier because they've been fucking put on the deck. So they've been put on the deck, put on their arms, and then you have to get up and do a test of walking around after a referee. Some of them just like a zombie, absolutely out of it, walking around, chasing the referee. So funny. Oh, God. Brilliant.
I haven't watched it. You just see like tiny little clips.
Yeah. I really like it anyway. I really like it. Right. Let's go on to the questions. Who's doing the first one?
I'll ask. It's It's hard to organize client events and meetups, even a monthly Zoom call, because all my clients are so busy. How can I tackle that with something that can keep everyone engaged without people missing out all the time?
I'm probably not going to say stuff that you don't already know, if I'm dead honest. These are just common sense kind of suggestions. I'm not saying they're right for you or anything like that, but these are the things. Listen, accepting people are busy needs to be the first thing. Like, yeah, I think where personal trainers go wrong with this client engagement piece is it's not normally thought through in a detailed plan. It's normally, right, I've got an idea to go and, I don't know, walk up a mountain. I'm going to text everyone, see if they want to come next Sunday, right? All I would say is that you should have some type of client experience calendar or something, and you should treat it a bit like your marketing, where you're talking about it regular. So for example, if I don't know, I'm doing a client event where I want to do a meetup and we want to walk up a hill or go do a long walk or whatever, do a client event, you kind of want to be giving them like 3 months' notice probably. And then start to talk about it quite heavily in the client group and so on to build that up, make it valuable, make them want to come. You've got to understand in this day and age as well, it's people find it quite awkward mixing with people they don't really know. So it's going to have to be really valuable for people to want to go out of the way to do it if they're so busy and they want to get through that socially awkward stage of not really knowing anyone. So there is that. I think give them enough notice, make sure it's really valuable, make sure it's something that all of your clients will buy into. Really common sense answers, but make sure you really plan and communicate it like really well to your clients. Except not everyone's going to come. And I think also go ahead with the first one, even if there's just 2 or 3 people that turn up. If there's just 2 or 3 people that turn up, then you can use the pictures or videos and stuff and make sure that you share it in the client group. And then obviously more people will probably come to the next one, just like anything. So yeah, a bit of planning, better communication, probably accepting that they're going to be busy. But then going ahead with it and making it a regular thing, because eventually if they're good enough and they become a really valuable piece for 2, 3, 4, 5 clients, then they'll end up being valuable for half, 60-70% of your clients anyway. You've got to expect 20-30% of people just won't come to that type of stuff. So that'd be my advice. It's really common sense shit, but yeah. What about you, Nick? Anything?
Didn't really listen to what you said, to be honest.
Get fucked. What were you laughing at whilst I was going through that?
Robin's comment on your story.
All right, yeah. How do you respond to inquirers who already devalue your service by shopping around for the cheapest option?
Well, if it's direct and they're directly asking for how much are you, which I'm assuming that's what they're doing, that's what you're referring to, and then trying to play you off against other PTs, businesses, whatever, I would respond in the same way I'd respond to anyone asking about the price point. This is the range of the prices. This is how we determine what price you would pay. And this is how we determine that, so forth and so forth. So I think if it's any type of inquiry online, that process should be pretty much kind of in sync with everything else in regards to your onboarding. If it's like a direct DM or a direct question, respond in that manner. I don't think you need to do anything more than that. Don't think you need to justify things. I think you need to be putting it back on them more so.
Yeah, and also accept people are going to shop around on price. It's like a natural human thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
If that's their way of looking at things and how they value, and yeah, we all do it. We all look around on price and see what we can get for value for money. And I think sometimes we've got to take a step back and go, see that as a red flag or a bad sign. It's probably a red flag for how much they understand you and your marketing as well. So maybe it's a bit of a sign of how can I get more value across for this person to know that they shouldn't be going for the cheapest option, but more so the best option for them. And if that's me, great. If it's not, then it's one of them. But yeah,
you would, wouldn't you? If you don't know any, if you don't have no clue, first thing, but one of the first things you're going to be wondering is like, well, what is the cost? Because the cost will determine, you know, what I lose and what I gain. So it's one of those. Yeah, I don't think it's a particularly bad thing. Just have the process taken through it. How would you split pricing for paired PT sessions?
75% of the usual price of the service. Really quick answer. 75, normally the logical way of going about it, where most, and I used to do this when I first started out, is you think, oh, it's 50%, but think about it, you still, there's still an element of individualizing the programming, individualizing the feedback, the check-in process, the nutrition method. So you're still coaching two people. So you definitely shouldn't be getting paid half price for each person, if that makes sense. So 75% each for the usual service that you're pricing for. Anything you'd add?
No, not really. Not really. I think, yeah, I would definitely agree with that as a ballpark kind of figure to go off. And just remember, if that's like people coming to you, people might come to you with the assumption that you might split the cost for them. So I guess there's a big difference between you marketing and generating leads to bring people in and on that service versus people coming to you as well. So again, I would just have that very clear in your mind. Treat them as individuals. Treat them as individuals, but train them together. I think that's the key thing, rather than sell the hours to them both, if that makes sense. Mm. Next one.
Fucking hell, was that nice?
Next one.
Absolute weirdo. I'm looking at changing my referral campaign and needing some advice. I'm going to use the last Saturday session of the month as an opportunity to bring someone along for free. I used to do that. Not on a Saturday, though. My referrals haven't been great over the last year. Do you have any tips to incentivize members to what to bring? To incentivize members to want to bring members along to this. I know you've spoken about doing quarterly prizes in the past, so I could potentially run this event once a quarter instead of once a month. And if I'm doing it once a quarter, would you suggest giving away a prize that is worth 3 months of membership? And do you have any suggestions for runners-up prizes? Bloody doing all the work, are you? Can you just do it?
Okay, so incentive to members to bring their friends or family members along. I think any type of thing where they can work together. So whether they bring a team, whether they partner up, whether it's a charity event, you double it up as. I think that always works really, really well to incentivize people to come down. Plus, obviously, it's never a bad thing to do something that's meaningful, as well as potential promotion for your business. So that's what I would think about. Like that's what literally I did. I had the Friday morning guys, and I used to do almost like a bit of a buddy. They had to bring someone from work or friend or family member with them. I think we did it every month or every 6 weeks. I can't remember, every month or 6 weeks. It just used to be like a really fun kind of generic little competitive environment for a session. And then we used to get breakfast afterwards and stuff. So I think either one of those things would probably work. If it's really simple, clear, you get them excited about it. You might put out to the members of the boot camp to nominate a charity that's close to them. It might be a shout. Quarterly prizes in the past. So I potentially win this event every quarter. Yep, I agree. I'm doing this once a quarter. What would you suggest giving away? A prize that is worth 3 months of membership. I would give something away different, personally. I would give something away that's like proper, really, like, I'm not saying membership's not decent, but like something where they're going to tell their friends about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you put your hand in your pocket and bought someone a weekend away, or vouchers to a really decent restaurant in town, or an experience day or something like that, where they're going to tell all their friends, they're going to tell their family members, they're going to tell people about that. Would they tell someone about getting a 3 month membership? Probably not. Even though it's a nice touch, probably not. So I would look at the terms of that, i.e. if someone signs up for a minimum of X amount of time, then take that value of that. So whether that is, you know, a minimum of 3 months at a cost of, I don't know, £200 or £300, maybe take 150 quid of that and put it back into a referral prize. So yeah, I would look at those things. One thing you could do also is put it out to the members as well. Put it out to the guys, like give some options. Like, I'm putting together a referral prize. I really want it to be something really cool for you all. What would you like? Option A, B, or C. And so at least then you know what they're going to be excited about. And do you have any suggestions for runner-up prizes? No. I would.
and when he says no, it's probably for the best for you. Just because of his creative skills.
Hey, what are you going about them? That was
what?
That was a good night. That was creative.
Yeah, it was, to be fair.
Yeah, so fucking pipe down. I'm gonna power slap you.
Fucking brilliant, though. I really want to do it. You just know that there's going to be blokes who've been on day sessions all day, who are with their mate in a bar.
100%.
Doing that, it's no longer arm wrestling, it's power slap.
Yeah, and they get the chalk off the pool table. And
I want a day like this. That is a day out for me. That I love a day out like that.
Blokes walking around with like blue chalk hand marks. And
I would love that. Love it. Until it goes too far.
Which it always will.
Yeah, I know. Fucking hell. Right, next question.
No, I don't think so, mate. I think you keep it quite simple, is what I meant by that. Like, keep the referral prizes really simple. So once one of your friends signs up.
Yeah, I didn't used to do runner-up prizes. Honestly, I've been honest in the past, and I said referrals were the main source of my lead generation, and I used to dress up like a bit of a prick at the same time as doing it, but that was my main source. And exactly what you've just gone through is exactly what I did, and I never did a runner-up prize. I don't think I might have done it once, maybe, but I didn't do it often. Yeah, so, I'll tell you what else. Oh, I know this is really shit standard thing, but sometimes, like, for something that you're doing, small group, I think I just went across to see who asked the question, small group or boot camp wise, Open weeks work really well with a charity theme, in my opinion. They work really well where they can drag their friends in for a like common sense of belonging and a good cause. So they work really well. Don't neglect them as free marketing. But from a paid marketing perspective, I 100% throw some money at it, like exactly what Nick described before. Go on, next question.
good one. How would you create an environment of clients? Hang on. How would you create an environment? I'm guessing that's for clients being coached rather than just trained in a session. Up the fucking toffees.
Do you know what that means, up the fucking toffees?
No.
You don't know what it means. Everton beat Arsenal. He's an Everton fan, isn't he?
Is that
Dave? Yeah, it will be, yeah. Looking at that. Okay, this is a good question and one that I could talk about all day. But first and foremost, the first step of creating the right environment to ensure a client is being coached rather than just trained in a session is to be unbelievable at listening to them from the very first point of contact. And that sounds like a really shit answer, but it's so true, because if you listen to them in just general conversation, what will come out as they buy into you more is the common challenges they face, the barriers they have, the frustrations, and all of that type of stuff will come out organically in the conversations. If you're listening to that, and then you create, which is my next point, really good self-awareness of them things, this sets the process up of them being in an environment where they're being coached, not just trained. And what I mean by that is people start to become self-aware off the back of your listening that they need far more than just turning up to the gym and to be trained. So for me, it starts with like the first point of contact with someone. And I know that's not easy because it's not a real process that you can follow, if that makes sense. But it's really, really good listening, creating really good self-awareness and getting people to self-reflect on the fact that they will need more than just that coaching session. And honestly, in a lot of ways, that's where it starts and ends, because if you miss that at the start and go on to dictate, that's when they've come to you with this perception and you're meeting that perception by turning around and go, right, what is it that you want? What do you think you need? Oh, 3 times 30-minute sessions, and you just need to turn up to me because otherwise you wouldn't do it. You fall into that trap. Whereas if you really listen, it becomes easier to create that self-awareness for them to turn around and go, actually, yeah, I struggle with consistency, motivation, accountability. Okay, well, I have this check-in process that really supports with that. Yeah, I really struggle with sometimes knowing what to eat and how to eat, or I struggle with motivation to train on my own. You're picking up on all of that and going, right, okay, you've mentioned you just want personal training sessions, but you also, although you also said that you struggle with consistency and accountability, like, how do you find that you're going to deal with that on your own away from me? And you also mentioned you struggle with X and Y. How do you feel like you're going to overcome that when you're not in the gym? And then, so that type of listening, self-awareness, self-reflection really helps create the right environment for a person to be coached. And from that point, you then set up on the right foot with that client. And yes, now and again, it's quite easy. It might go off in a different direction where they're starting to just value the sessions, but this is where certain interventions come in that are really important, like the monthly business review or the monthly review, where you can go back through that process of that self-awareness, you creating that self-awareness again on what it is that they really need, not necessarily what it is that they just want. Anything you'd add to that?
No, I think that's straightforward and simple.
Yeah, just thinking like it's difficult because it's not a set process. Like, it's not me turning around and saying, do this, and a client will more than likely be in an environment or a mindset to be coached rather than just value the session, because each client is different. And I think what's important is, like, we're delivering the course. What taught me this is the same things that we teach you, and that self-determination theory. And it's really nailing them principles of self-determination theory that will help you, and motivational interviewing that will help you with that. Yeah, that's it. That's all I'm going to say. The next question is a belter. What are the traits that make a great coach?
Similar what you just kind of mentioned there. And I think the first thing is what makes a great coach is using your experience in a way that it doesn't set your agenda for the people that you're coaching. So a lot of trainers, and I use the word trainers instead of coaches, are very much, and it's understandable, and I think we've all been there at some point, pushed basically what's worked for them onto their client, or their preferences onto their clients. and are very, very quick to try and solve a problem immediately through insecurities that they may not know the answer, and that might come across as unprofessional or maybe not as valuable as if they knew the answer straight away. So I think the first thing is really kind of understanding that the person standing in front of you is the expert in their life. You're not. And so pushing methods on them that work for you when you've got all the time to train 6-7 days a week and prep your food all day and whatnot necessarily isn't going to probably work for the vast majority of the population. That's the first thing. The second thing kind of goes hand in hand with that is you've got to be an incredibly good listener. But to be a good listener, you've got to ask really good questions to get the answer, to understand the person. And the type of questions that majority of the time that would enable that is more open questions. And open questions that elicit critical thinking, that empower the person, that creates reflective thinking as well, that creates a bit of a oh shit moment. I think those are the traits that makes a really good coach. And constantly seeking to understand, being incredibly curious about that person. I think those are the main things about what the traits that make a good coach, and obviously experience. I think yours.
The only thing I would add to that is just constantly hunting out more technical knowledge, not in a way to overwhelm or you or the client or prove value or anything like that. I think we should always look to practice the skill that we're here to do, and that's obviously support people to change behaviors and do it in the right way. So I think apart from just constantly upskilling yourself on the skills that you need to do your job properly, and I mean training, behavior change, nutrition and all of that, human behavior, biomechanics, that type of stuff, at the end of the day that's our job. So hunting out that to become really good in them areas, like programming and so on, I think that's the only thing that I would add. I think Dave's expanded on his question. I'll ask this one, mate, to you. Within the coaching chat, how important do you think it is to be more direct with your expectations? I know from my manager days, I was always really laid back. That's just me. Do you think this can be a hindrance to your clients?
There's a difference between being direct with your expectations. Depends what you mean. I think you've got to set boundaries for your business, but your expectations don't have to be pushed and thrust upon someone, but you need to basically make people aware of the different processes. As an example, if Dave's my client sitting there and he wants to do X, Y, and Z, lose weight and tone up really, really quick, and he wants results and blah, 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 and that's really important to him. So for me, instead of me saying, right, you've got to do everything I say, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say, right, if you want that, these are the consequences of it. This is what you're going to have to lose to attain that. And I think that's it's being open and honest and transparent with those things, rather than going, right, do everything I say because these are my expectations. Because your expectations, again, may not fit that person's lifestyle. And so if you're very kind of restrictive in your approach to things, then it's not going to fit most people because you've got to adapt things, right? You can pretty much sit here and say that right now, the vast majority of the industry does programming, does, if you face-to-face, does sessions, gives feedback, does some form of check-in, right? And maybe that a lot of people are catching up to some form of education on top of that, right? So The features are very, very similar across the board from pretty much 99% of every PT and coach that's out there, right? But how you apply those features to the individual, and it depends on what service you're offering, but let's just say that this is a one-to-one bespoke service, whether that's online or face-to-face, you've got to adapt that for the person. My answer to that.
The only thing I would add to it is where I struggled with the transition, and clearly everyone knows what my kind of personality type is like, I'm direct, so that's natural to me. And I can flip to that at any point, even, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just who I am. So practicing trying not to be direct because of my expectations or because of the way my personality and communication is, I found it difficult to know that I had to spend more of my time pulling information from the client to get them to build self-efficacy than pushing that information on the client. So the couple of things that I was conscious of always doing at the start with a client is exactly what Nick's just said. This is what you need to know, right? To enable you to get the results that you want, that we've discussed, this is what you need to know, exactly what Nick's just said. And then normally I'd ask questions like, how can I get the best out of you? Or how am I best communicating with you to get the best out of you? Them types of questions, sometimes, some people have never been asked that. So their response, they're normally taken back by it. And what it normally does is get them to self-reflect and go, right, well, normally it comes up with a bad experience from another PT. I used to get that a lot. I don't know if you used to get that, but they used to tell me, oh, well, he just used to be a bit of a military person. It used to shut me down and piss me off. So that learned me lessons. But then a couple of questions at the start really helped me because I was having that battle. Listen, as strange as it sounds, I asked the parent, like now I'm coaching kids under 6 and 7s. I'm going to the parents and going, right, kids new, how am I best getting the best out of your kid? How best am I communicating? Because some of them are just like, be direct with him, tell him what he needs to be told and all of that. And the others are like, he needs praise and he needs to sometimes be understood and praised, or that one doesn't hear very, I know it sounds really stupid, but the principles are the same. And actually what that does is it stops wasting me time. I can show empathy and I can show understanding. And I can get them on my side. Well, clients are no different. I asked that at the start. It really increases and improves your chance of buying and any disconnect within the expectations, if that makes sense. So I don't know if that'll help.
You know, I heard a great quote the other day. Oh. You'll like this one. You've got to do a whole lot of unlearning to be able to coach.
Yeah, it's so fucking true. Yeah, that's so true. That's a really good quote. You'll see that on the tweet this week, man. Saturday's post is about that coaching, so you might change it. You can change it if you want.
I've got another one.
Go on.
This is really relevant. All our results are directly linked to our quality of thinking. And coaching enables the quality of thinking to get better and better and better. Yeah. And the last one, last quote of the day.
The first one was the best one, so let's hope it's not took a steep decline.
What is obvious is oblivious. Yeah. Which is basically a really shit version.
Common sense is not very common, basically.
Yeah, it's a shit version of... You don't know.
But some good coaching questions there, actually. It's nice to get that stuff in it because it's the right thing. And just when you think like you're getting better at it, go and coach some 5, 6, and 7-year-olds because you fucking feel like a right bag of shit again. Oh my god! Right, that was a good one. That I enjoyed it. Thanks for the questions, people. Hopefully they were helpful responses. No, dude, that's usual green. You should know me by now. All right, yeah. Morning. Matthew Talbot, sarcasm. I still don't get it. Anyway, right. We'll love you and leave you.
See you later.
Nice one.
Bye-bye.